The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parashas is Parashas Veschanim, and today also is the day after Tisha B'Av, the 10th of Av. At least it was until a few minutes ago. So I'd like to draw from the Parsha something that also has to do with Tisha B'Av. In the Gemara in Masechet Gittin, Perek HaNizokin, in the Sugi of Kamtsa Bakamtsa, that's the sugya which deals with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara brings on Daf Nun Hey, excuse me, on Nun Vav at the end of Omer Aleph and Nun Vav Omer Beis, the Romans had laid siege to Yerushalayim. And the Rebbe and Zakkai wanted to go out to make peace with them. The Baryanim, these were the radicals, the radical elements and extremists, they wanted war. And they burned down the storehouses that the three Ashirim, the three wealthy people, Nagdivin Ben Gurion, Kalb Shavua, and Ben Tzitzis HaKesis, had, which they were going to be mafanish to sustain the city, Yerushalayim, for 3 years. So they wanted to force a confrontation. And the Romans had sent Aspasinus, Caesar, to Caesar, to command this siege. Rabbi Yehem and Zakkai had a nephew that was active with the Baryanim, with the radicals. He summons him to come and speak to him, and they devised a strategy in which they could smuggle Rabbi Yehem and Zakkai out of the city in order that he could speak to the Roman Caesar. So they did this, and when he successfully got out of the city, he said to the Roman Caesar, Shalom to you, King. Shalom to you, King. Omalei, so the Roman Caesar answered him, Mechayavta treik tolo. Really, you're deserving of the death penalty twice. Chodo de la malkoma. Firstly, I'm not the king. He was a Caesar, but he was not the emperor. He was not the king. The king was back in Rome. And you call someone a king who's not the king, that's treason. Secondly, and another reason why you're deserving of the death penalty, if I am the king, so why didn't you come and see me till now? So the second question he answers, because I couldn't. The Baryanim won't let me. We had enough difficulty even coming now. But in regards to the first question, he said, Dikramat la Malka, no, this that you say you're not the king, Ibra Malkaat, you are the king. The Ilam Malkaat, Le Mimsri Yishlam Biyotko. Because if you were not the king, then Yishlam would not be given over to your hands. Diksi Vahalvonain Ba'adir Yipol, it states that the Levonain will fall into the hands of an Adir. An Adir, someone of glorious strength. Ve'en adir el melech. And an adir, he said, refers to a king. And he brings a proof to this. And Levonain, in Levonain ele Beis Hamikdash. And the Levonain refers to the Beis Hamikdash as it states, Ohor HaTeva Zeh V'Halvonon. So therefore, you are king. Since Yerushalayim is falling into your hands, Yerushalayim will be given over only to a king. Then they started to discuss the second problem. So why didn't you come and see me before? While he was explaining all of this, Adohochi osi prishtiko aleho mireimi. Some very, very important emissaries came from Rome, and Omalei, and they said to the Caesar, Kum, Gemeslei Kesa, the Amri Hanu Hashivi Dereme, Luusve Peresho. Stand up. Because the head Caesar back in Rome, who was the king, has died, and the Senate, the other nobility, have voted that you should become the king. So actually, at the time that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai had greeted him as the king, he was. And then the Gemara tells us a story following that. He says, he was in the midst of changing shoes when this news came, and he had put on one shoe and he was trying to put on the other one, and he couldn't put it on, wouldn't fit. So he tried to take off the first one, and the first one wouldn't come off. Now he couldn't understand what's happening. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai told him, don't worry, lo titzareh shmuteva ashaloch. He said, it's the good news. When a person gets good news, in Yiddish there's an expression, so a person has nachas, er wird gesund, er wird fett, and gesund from das. A person gets good news, he gets bigger. And that's why you got good news in the middle of putting on one shoe and taking off the other. This is why you're having difficulty. So he asked him, Maitakante, you know, you're so clever, you're so wise, so what should I do? He says, call over someone, the lemis v'daituch minei, that you can't stand, that gets on your nerves, and let him walk by you a few times, and state, v'ruach nicha tiyavish korem. Because when a person gets upset, then his flesh shrinks. So he did this, and he was able to fix this up. I once said over this Gemara in the presence of a doctor. So the doctor told me, he says, this can be explained medically very well. So he explained it to me. At any rate, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai said that he has to be a king, because if he's not a king, then the Beis Hamikdash would not be falling into his hands. Because it states that the Levonim will fall into the hands of an Adir. And an Adir, ein Adir el Melech. An Adir is a king. And the Levonain is the Beis Hamikdash. In our Pasha, was Canon, Moshe, right at the beginning of the Pasha, is appealing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to let him go into Eretz Yisrael. And in the third Pasuk of our Pasha, Pasuk Chofei, Moshe says, "Ebro no ve'ere eso oretz hatova, asher be'ever hayadin, ohor hatev hazeh ve'halvonain. Let me cross the Jordan River, so I can see the oretz hatova, that good land." He asked for three things: the good land, ohor hatev, the good mountain, and the levonain. The oretz hatova, that's Eretz Yisrael. The Horatev Rashi brings is Yerushalayim, and the Levonain is Ubeis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash. Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Tova. When Kalev ben Yefuna came back from spying out the land. He said, he and Yeshua, he said, the order tzi tova mi od mi od. The Maral explains, here in Sefer Netzach Yisrael, Perikei, and in Vurus Hashem also, Perikei Nalef, he discusses these, this at the Torah tells us. Tova means something which is good and perfect. We have the physical world. The physical world in itself does not have broch in it. Not in itself, not in essence. And it's not perfect. Broch doesn't come from the physical world. If you look at the earth itself, bracha has to be placed into the physical world. The bracha comes min ha'elyonim, not min ha'tachtomim. It does not come from the earth itself, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who places the bracha in the earth. And this is the physical level of the world. Eretz Yisrael is elevated amongst the physical level of the world. And this we see from the fact that it's called Eretz HaKdosha. It's called this. It's a land which was sanctified. Kedusha, sanctity, means, Rashi always explains, Nivdal, something which is elevated. It's a land, but it's elevated from other lands. The Mishnah that states, Eretz Yisrael Kodesh, Mishar Kol Arotzes. It's sanctified more than all other lands. And this we see the Peiroseho in its fruits. You grow fruits in other lands, they do not necessarily have Kedusha in them. When you grow fruits in Eretz Yisrael, there's all types of Kedusha in it that requires all types of mitzvahs. There's the Truman, the Maestras, and so forth and so on. And mitzvahs come because of a elevated sanctity. In people also it states that those who are meruba b'mitzvahs, that's a sign of more kedusha. For example, we find by the Kahanim, Mora says, "Hir b'lehem mitzvah yisodus." The Kahanim were given an additional dimension of mitzvahs. Why? Because they were given an additional dimension of kedusha, of sanctity. Eretz Yisrael was given an additional dimension of sanctity, and therefore an additional dimension of mitzvahs, which means that it's elevated from other lands. And it's called Eretz HaTova, and this is why Eretz Yisrael is known as the land of Brocha. This was at the time when we were all in our land and we had our Beis HaMikdash. So Eretz Yisrael was known as the source of Brocha for the rest of the lands in the world. Yerushalayim is an additional dimension. And that's why Yerushalayim is referred to Hahor HaTov. Just like a mountain is elevated from the land, Yerushalayim is elevated from Eretz Yisrael. In the Mishnah it states, Yerushalayim Kodesh Mikol Shara Yoris. Yerushalayim is sanctified from all of the other cities in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore it's referred to as a Horatov. And Yerushalayim has more dimensions of mitzvahs than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Now we come to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was even a greater dimension. And the Mishnah states that the area of the Beis HaMikdash was Kodesh Mikol Shar Mekemes. It is more sanctified than all other places. There is Yisrael had, the Beis HaMikdash possessed a level which no other place possessed. The Beis HaMikdash was the Mishkan Hashem. It was the sanctuary of Hashem. What does that mean? It was the place where Hashem chose to dwell. therefore it was called Mishkon. Mishkon means Sheikhing, Vishachanti B'Seichon. And it was called Migdosh because in essence it was Kodesh. In essence it was elevated. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to dwell there not just at certain times or not just at certain periods of history or not just temporary, but this was his dwelling place forever. Before the Beis HaMikdash was established in Yerushalayim on Har HaBayis, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a lot of dwelling places. And as we see, the sanctuary was in the desert, then it came to Eretz Yisrael, and it was in one city, and then it was in another city. See, it was in Nob, Givon, and Shiloh, and so forth. And also, there were what was known as the Bomish, that we were allowed to bring sacrifices almost any place we wanted to. But once the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlema Melech, King Solomon, in Har HaBayis, that was called Beis Olamim. That was Zu Beis HaOlam. That became Hashem's place forever. Ben Esar HaBomos. And from that time on, we were never allowed to make altars in any other place, to bring sacrifices in any other place, to build a Mishkan in any other place. And that's why it was called Beis Olamim, or Beis HaBechira, his house forever, or his chosen place. Now, if that is the specific Mila dimension that the Beis HaMikdash has, that no other place in the world has. This was the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose should be his dwelling place forever. It was called Livonon. Livonon actually means a place on a mountain where great trees grew. This is what the word Livonon means. So this represented like a mountain was separated from the land, the place where the great trees grew. This was even more separated. This was not part of the mountain anymore. And therefore, it was referred to as the Livonon to tell us that this was even at a higher level, a level that was more separated. And the name Livonon specifically tells us something. Livonon actually has two inferences. One is, it comes from the word Lovon, white. In the world, we have the physical world and the non-physical world. Man was created from the earth, he was infused with a non-physical spirit and soul. The more deeper we go into the physical world, the heavier the physical mass becomes. And the heavier the physical mass becomes, the heavier the colors of the physical mass become. For example, if you go into the earth, if you go into water, water is not as physical as earth. You go deep into water, it becomes dark. But if you go into a cave in the earth, there you see total darkness. The earth itself has no light whatsoever. The fact is, it becomes almost an antithesis to light. Light can almost not penetrate the earth. The further away we go from physical mass, as physical mass thins out, the more light penetrates. Until if you go
high up into the atmosphere. There you have the most perfect light that we can have on this world. Light represents the non-physical level of the world. This is why, incidentally, that the Torah is always referred to as light, because the Torah is the spiritual light of the world. And light represents something which is contrary to that what is physical. Now, in the colors that we have, the color which has the least, well, let's say the color which has the greatest transparency to it, or the greatest light in it, see, is white. The color which has the least brightness, the least light in it, or transparency, would be black. And black is the antithesis of white. The Beis HaMikdash, which is the highest place that one can find in the physical world, therefore was given the name Levonon, which came from the word Lomon. This is one reason, one influence from the name. There's another influence from the name that the Gemara brings in Masechet Yuma, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis. Loma Nikra Beis HaMikdash Levonon Al Shem Shemalavnin Esav Neiseim Shel Yisrael, because it whitened the sins of Israel. The atonement came from the Beis HaMikdash. This is where we brought our sacrifices. This was the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. This, that one can receive atonement, this is a purity. The sin does not come from the spirit of the person. The sin comes because he is made from the earth. He was by Yotzar Aso Odom, Ofer Min Adoma. He's made from the earth. Purity comes from the spirit of the person. So the Beis HaMikdash was able to atone for the person because of its dimension, that it was at a spiritual height, and therefore it could bring atonement to the person, because atonement came from the spirit of the person. Sin, hate, came from the physical elements of the person. So this is another inference in the name of Levonim. At any rate, this is the highest level we have. In the Haggadah Shel Pesach, we have a song there, which we call Dayenu. Kama Milas Tevas. Many, many wonderful milas HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. A mila is something good, but technically it means a mila is a dimension which is higher. It comes from the word olo, aliyah. And there are tesvav, 15 mila terms, 15 levels. And we start because HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt and so forth. Those 15 levels culminate with Bono Lono Es HaBeis HaBechira, that he built for us the Beis HaMikdash. That's the highest level that we have in the physical world. Now, therefore, since the Beis HaMikdash is at such a level, and it is so elevated from the rest of the world, no one can conquer it, even when Klal Yisrael is Ein Eisin Nutzeinu Shel Mokom, even when Klal Yisrael does not fulfill the will of Hashem, and they are to be banished from the Beis HaMikdash, no one can conquer it except a person who is also elevated from the nation, and that's a king. Therefore, Rabbi Yehiam Zakkai said, you are a king, because you are in the midst of destroying, of conquering the Beis HaMikdash. And it states that the Beis HaMikdash will fall only into the hands of an Adir. Ein Adir Elo Melech. This is how Rabbi Yehiam Zakkai knew that he must be the king. Now, because of this, with this understanding, we can understand further a Mishnah in Masechta Avos, which we have quoted a number of times. I don't know, here Wednesday night perhaps, but Shabbos many times. The Mishnah Masechta Avos in Perikei Mishnah Hei states, Asor Nisim Nasu Laviseinu Bebeis HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles that took place for our fathers in the Beis HaMikdash, at the time when the Beis HaMikdash stood in its whole glory. And it lists the 10 miracles. The first three, Lahipila Isha Mereya Sara Kodesh. There was a lot of killing of animals in the Beis HaMikdash. Enormous amount for all the sacrifices. They had to be slaughtered, they had to be cleaned, and every day animals were brought. Every morning there was, whenever we daven, the davening is designed after the korbanos. We daven shachris every morning because there was the tomid shel shachar. We daven mincha every afternoon because there was the tomid shel ben abayim. Rish Chodesh, an extra korban came. That was the musafim. Shabbos, extra sacrifice came. That was musaf. Yantif, and so forth. Pesach, everyone came with the korban Pesach. Many people would get together and bring a sheep or a goat. But an enormous amount were brought. Mora brings one time there were 600,000 sheep. And they all had to be sacrificed from Erev Pesach. They couldn't start slaughtering them, shechting them until afternoon, after Chatzei Sayyim, after half of the day, and they all had to be finished before darkness. So one would get the picture that the Beis HaMikdash was one giant abattoir. I mean, virtually that's what it was, a gigantic abattoir. Now, if you ever walk into a gigantic abattoir, I mean, here we have abattoirs that might be dealing in animals, but not in 600,000 of them in a day. Now, if any of you have ever had the opportunity or the privilege to go into an abattoir, you'll see it's not a very pretty sight at all from all around. Okay? The smells are enormous, blood's all over, and so forth. This was not the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was the ultimate in perfection, and it was the ultimate in beauty, and the ultimate in cleanliness. Its beauty was so astounding. And the beauty of Yerushalayim was so astounding that it would make the Swiss Alps look like a slum. This is the reality of it. This is how far we are from it. Rashi brings that there was no more beautiful land in the world than Mitzrayim, Egypt. It was the most beautiful land in the world. It doesn't say Switzerland, it says Egypt. That means that Switzerland took second or third or fourth place. And there was a particular city in Egypt which was the most beautiful of all of Egypt. So on. And there all the kings had palaces. That was the place for the kings. And it states that the worst of Eretz Yisrael was Hebron. Hebron was very rocky, and that's why it became a place for a basic forest. They used it for burial. And Hebron, which was the worst of Eretz Yisrael, was seven times more beautiful than the best of Egypt, which was the most beautiful country in the world. And the Gemara brings, once mentioned this, see, our buildings today are very, very plain and simple, the modern architecture. And even your buildings that they build for millions and millions of dollars. I mentioned this once before, that when we were in St. Louis, there was a hotel, five-star hotel, that had a magnificent ballroom. And we were there once for a, and they had just opened it up, they had redone it. And we were there for a function, a big dinner for a day school, 1,000 people. We were sitting together with a couple that had come from Hungary, a doctor and his wife. And I mentioned to her, I says, look at this magnificent ballroom. And she said, this is nothing but a big barn. I said, what? Yes, it's four walls. I didn't know what she meant. Later on, I started to see pictures of opera houses in Budapest, or museums, or libraries in Europe. And you see, it was a barn. They had magnificently high ceilings, covered with heavy drapes from the ceilings to the floor, with plush carpeting, gigantic crystal chandeliers, sculpturing and paintings covering all of the walls. And this was, she was right. It was a big barn. Now the Gemara brings. And the Romans built magnificent edifices. Magnificent. You go to university and you study art, sculpturing, and you study what the Romans built. Yet the sages tell us that the Romans were a cheap imitation to the Greeks. And the Gemara says that whoever hasn't seen the Beis Hamikdash in its splendor has not seen a beautiful edifice, a beautiful building in their life. All of these other buildings from the Romans and from the Greeks, we're not talking about today. There was handiwork. When the Romans and the Greeks built, they would have thousands of artisans working on the murals and on the gold and the silver. And the Gemara says, the sages say, Mishalorah binyan shall hurdus. When hurdus rebuilt the base of Migdush, Lairah binyonai no abba elam. Hasn't seen anything. This is how everything dimmed into the background. That's why when we go visit the Kotera Maravi, this is the... There was a story Rabbi Loy once said here, that there was a king that banished his son, became very angry at his son, and he drove him away. And the son went and he lived some other place, and he lived in utter poverty, to the point where he even forgot that he was once a prince. One day, the king is coming through the city, or the village, and news went around that if you'll ask the king for a favor, he'll give it to you. So he went to the king and he said, perhaps you could give me some straw so I could have a good mattress for my wife and myself. And the king recognized that this was his son. And he says, have you gone away so far where you forgot even who you are? You're the prince, the son of the king, and this is what you come to ask for, some straw. See? And this is how we are in Golus. That we have a remnant of what was the most beautiful edifice and perfect edifice, not in the world, in world history, in the creation of the world. And we glorify ourselves that we have a few ruins left of it. At any rate, this is what this Mishnah is telling us. That firstly, in the Beis Hamikdash, Lahipila Eshem Isha Meireich Bisar HaKodesh. There was never a time. See, many, it's possible that a woman, a pregnant woman, heaven forbid, a strong smell can cause her to come into premature labor. This never happened in the history of the Beis Hamikdash. Lehisriach Bisar Kodesh Ma'olam. No meat ever rotted in the Beis Hamikdash forever. And further, Lainir Zvuv Beis Hamikdashim. One fly was never to be seen in the history of the whole Beis Hamikdash. One fly. If you speak to people who are in the meat business or the cattle business, they will tell you what that means. That was the first three. Then it states, Le'ira keri lekein godel b'yei makipurim, le'kobel kshomim eishel atzi amarocha. The Kain Godel never had an omission on Yom Kippur. They had fires on the Mizbeach. And the Mizbeach HaChitzain, the altar, was in an open courtyard. And it states, Esh Tomi Tukad Bay, that fire had to be there all of the time. But what happened with the rain? Never did the rain extinguish the fires of the Beis Hamikdash, of the altars. Leinotzcho ruach es amud ha'oshon. There was a column of smoke that went up from the Mizbeach. Now generally the wind would come and break the column. That never happened. Never did the wind come and break the column of smoke. There were three particular sacrifices that came. One was the Omer. This is what was brought at the beginning of the Omer. One was the Shtei Alechem. This is what was brought. These were three meal offerings. One was brought, this was brought on Shavuos, and Lechem Aponim, which was brought every Erev Shabbos. Never did these sacrifices, even these sacrifices, become impure. And then there are the final three. Omnim tzfufim umishtachavim ravachim. When all of Israel would come up to the Beis Hamikdash, they stood shoulder to shoulder, packed, where there was no room whatsoever. And then on Yom Kippur, when they heard the Kohen Gadol, he was in the Kodesh HaKodesh, the Kodesh HaKodoshim, and he would shout out Hashem's name, they would all bow down. You need much more room to bow. Mishtachvim Ravochim. When everyone bowed, there was room for everyone. Lehizik Nochish Va'akre B'Yushalayim Ha'olam. No one in Yushalayim ever got bitten by a serpent or a scorpion. And Lo Omar Odom Lachaveir Otzali Amokim Sholim Yerushalayim. When all of Israel came into Yerushalayim to come to the regal three times a year, no one ever complained that it's too crowded, I can't find a place to stay. So these were the 10 miracles that happened all of the time. A brief explanation into this, the Maral gives. One principle that we find in the physical world and this is a principle with almost no exception, is that everything has an end. Everything comes to its end. There's death. There's by people. Or there is hefsid and ifush, when things eventually rot. This is a principle in the physical world. The Beis HaMikdash was not included, was not governed by this principle. And this is why we find that a woman never, because of the Beis HaMikdash, went into a premature labor where she should, heaven forbid, lose her child. Further, not even meat ever rotted in the Beis HaMikdash. And further, a fly was never found in the Beis HaMikdash. Flies always come to things that are starting, that have some type of rotting in them. See, this is what attracts flies. A fly was never seen in the Beis HaMikdash. This is how far from that principle the Beis HaMikdash was. Secondly, also, the fly represents something else. The fly, the sages tell us, represents that what is ma'us and gnus, that what is very far from the person. Where do you find fly? Well, you can always find a fly here or there, but where do we find a lot of flies? We find a lot of flies by the rubbish, by the garbage, say, by the rot. This is what a fly represents. The fly is attracted to that. A fly always represents that what is ma'us and gnus, which is disgusting to the person. Yeah, the Beis HaMikdash was the ultimate in hod. It's brought hod v'hador. Hod v'hador means in ultimate beauty and perfection, and therefore it was the opposite extreme than that what a fly represents, and therefore le'niras vuv Beis HaMikdash. Fly was never seen in the Beis HaMikdash. Then it states, "Le'irakeri lekoin gadol b'yom kippurim le'gadol shomim shalatei amarocha." The next four refer to things, even though they were, even things that were not totally destroyed, like usually, heaven forbid, someone can. By the women losing a child, or by the meat becoming rotten. Here we're referring to even minor losses. This never happened in the Beis HaMikdash. Even the loss of the fire didn't happen in the Beis HaMikdash. The ruach, this represented the perfection of the Beis HaMikdash, that the smoke of the fire went up in a perfectly straight column and was not broken or confused at all, and the elements could not affect it. The psul, or even a psul, a tumah, an impurity, could not affect the sacrifices. And then we have the final three, and this is referring not only to a loss but even a tsar. A tsar, we could say, is a discomfort. It states, "Eimlim sfufim umishtachvim rvochim." You know, we are always imposed upon with discomforts. We are always subjected to discomforts. This is part of the world. You sit in a chair, it's not comfortable. When you get in a bus, it's crowded. You come into a room, it's cluttered. This is part of life because this is part of the physical world. Things get in the way of each other. One of the principles of physics is two things can occupy the same space at the same time. Well, we live a life where many things are always trying to occupy the same space at the same time. The Beis HaMikdash that was not subjected to these principles. There, two places could. Two things could occupy the same space at the same time. Because anything there that was not subjected to these principles, and everything there was perfect, was the ultimate perfection. Therefore, there was as much space as needed. When they stood, there was no more room. Because it was not necessary for them, there would be more room. But everybody had standing room. When they had to bow, everyone had bowing room. Lehizik nochesh v'akra b'yushalayim ba'elam. Now here it's referring lehizik to not to a dangerous bite, but to the pain of the serpent. Why does it bring out this specifically? But now brings out something interesting. He says that's because that's the nature of the world. You know, we have certain mazikin, which is the nature of the world. It's not the nature of the world for someone to become bitten by a lion or even by a dog. So these things do not happen often. But by the serpent it is, because this was the decree. Kodesh Baruch Hu told the serpent that I shall make hatred between you and woman, and your seed and her seed, and she will start, they will try to crush your head and you will try to bite their heel. So this is the nature of the world, and if it's the nature of the world, it's very difficult to free oneself from it. Yet Beis HaMikdash was not subjected to this. V'lo omar odem l'chaver etzar li amokom she'olim b'Yerushalayim. And a person never said to his friend, there's not enough room for all of us here in Yerushalayim, even though hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Jews would come up to Yerushalayim on the three v'golim, on the three yom tovim. Now, what is this all telling us? What is it bringing out? It's bringing out a very important point. These nisi, these miracles, were miracles which took place all of the time. Because it states, for example, a fly was never seen. In other words, not that today a fly was not seen. Or the meat never rotted. So these were miracles that happened all of the time. Miracles always happen. We find miracles happening many, many times. But a miracle can never happen constantly. That can't be. Why? What is a miracle? A miracle is a yetzia min hateva. A miracle is a deviation from the norm. It's a deviation from the nature, a deviation from the normal behavior of nature. If something happens all of the time, then it ceases to be a deviation, and that becomes the norm. Therefore, a miracle cannot happen all of the time. Miracles can only happen periodically, because they're a deviation. They happen all of the time, then they become a norm, not a deviation. Here, these 10 miracles happen all of the time. What does this tell us? This tells us that that was the norm for that place. This tells us that that place was not subjected to the laws of nature that we find the rest of the world is subjected to. And that is the norm for that place. And why is that? Because the Beis Hamikdash was so elevated from the physical world that it basically was spiritual. It was made from physical stone and physical wood. But this basically became part of its spiritual edifice. In the physical world, we have a physical edifice that is imbued with a spirit. There, it was basically a spiritual edifice. And the physical structure of it became part of the spiritual edifice. And therefore it was governed by totally different principles. And it had to be that way. Because this was the one place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose that he should dwell. Hashem selected one place in the world where he should dwell. So it had to be different than every other place. And it had to be a place that was appropriate for him. Therefore, this was the Beis HaBechira, his chosen place, Beis Olamim, where he will dwell forever, became HaMikdash, the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And this is why it was called Levonon. So Moshe asked to see Ha'aretz HaTova, the good land that was elevated from the rest of the lands. And it received therefore more bracha from Lamala, from above, than the other lands. And through it came bracha to the other lands. He asked to see Hohor HaTov, this good mountain, which was more elevated than even the land, and that was Yerushalayim, Ve'halavonon, and the Lavonon, which represented something that was white, that brought kapora, atonement, to all of the chatoim, to the sins. The Lavonon represented even a higher place on the mountain where the great cedars grew. This was the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash was a spiritual plane. And something at that level was perfect. It was never to the right or to the left, like the column of smoke. And the physical influences, the principle of the physical influences could affect it. Therefore, these miracles took place all of the time. And this was the beauty, the hod and the hoder of the Beis HaMikdash. This is why that when Abiyachim and Zakkai came to the Caesar, he said Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Shalma Aloch Malka, Shalma Aloch Malka. My greetings of peace to you, the king. And he answered him, how can you call me king? I'm not the king. I'm the Caesar in charge, but I'm not the king. So he says, yes, you have to be a king. Because Elav Malkoat, if you won't be the king, then Lalim Srei Yushalayim Biyotcho, Yushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash will not fall into your hands. Because it states, "Valvonon be'adir yipol," the Lavonon will fall into the hands of the Adir. An Adir means a king. And the Lavonon is the Beis HaMikdash, as it states, "Ohorateva zeh valvonon." Only a king will be able to conquer the Beis HaMikdash. And we see that this was even at the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu already was departing from the Beis HaMikdash. He was taking the Shekhinah and leaving. Still, it could only fall into the hands of a king. So, this is what this has to do with Argolos, the Korban, and this is the Parsha, that this is what Moshe asked to see. The Oretz HaTova, the Hor HaTev, and the Lebanon. We should all be zeicher to live to see the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, Hail of Yamin.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.